Chicago tends to be overshadowed by New York City on the East Coast and Los Angeles on the West. However, Thomas Dijk claims in his new book, The Third Coast, When Chicago Built the American Dream, that from 1932 to 1960, Chicago experienced a golden age that he says made it the most influential city, not just in the Midwest, but in the entire United States. Mr. Dijk is an editor-at-large at Thames and Hudson Publishers, and this is his fifth book. It is published by Penguin Press. I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
You argue that Chicago was more important than New York and Los Angeles at that time, but that was when New York became the international center of art and finance, and Hollywood was going through its golden period.
Well, I think more is probably I think the important thought that I would like to inject in here is that Chicago had a central role here. You know, that the two coasts had their own clearly massive roles in American culture and business and all that. But Chicago was the middle of the country. Everything had to come through it. You know, if you were driving across country, going across country, you had to stop there. Even by train, you had to stop there by law. And so that made it, through a lot of ways, kind of America's laboratory, its factory, its clearinghouse. It was the place where America came to meet each other.
And it was a place that was fed by immigration, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, from the very beginning, it wasn't a sort of city that happened by accident or for religious reasons or something. It was planned for business. And the people who came there, whether they were coming from, you know, Germany in the first wave of the 19th century or the wave of German exiles during World War II, you know, the intellectuals, or the African Americans coming up from the South on the IC. It was a place where you came to start over. And so that kind of innovation is bred into its bones.
Why did the Bauhaus architects choose to relocate in Chicago rather than some of the other urban centers?
Well, Chicago had that great tradition of architecture, that first school of Jenney and Sullivan and those great builders in Chicago in the late 19th century were really the first voice of architectural modernism that Frank Lloyd Wright then picks up. And it's Wright whose 1910 book of prairie-style architecture really begins one of the first notes of architectural modernism in Europe, actually. So in a way, the Bauhaus architects coming back to Chicago were kind of coming home. A lot of those immigrants who came over and, say, made furniture, Chicago was a big furniture city, saw themselves not as factory workers but as craftsmen.
But first, Gropius, who also insisted that the architects at the Bauhaus in Germany learned how to make things by hand.
Exactly.
And then, perhaps the most important of all the architects to go to Chicago, Mies van der Rohe,
right. Mies and the other great Bauhaus exile. One of the other reasons why I'd like to come to Chicago is I think you get good food. There were a lot of German emigres there, so they knew if they came here, at least, you know, they'd be able to get a good snack or a schnitzel. But Mies leaves in the late 30s. After everyone else, really, years after Gropius, and he possibly would have stayed if, in fact, the Nazis had given him enough, you know. But Mies's real allegiance was to the building. And so he would work for whoever paid him. He also did monuments for communist leaders, you know, during the earlier part of that period. So he was not political. He was about the spirit of the building. So he comes to Chicago to run the IIT, Illinois Institute of Technology's School of Architecture, but also redesign their campus.
But if for some reason, New York, despite the fact that it's had so much great architecture, it has never really encouraged great architecture. Chicago has. The Chicagoans are very proud of their buildings and of their public art. Is that something that goes back a long time?
Well, you know, Chicago is a city that's been built in very conscious ways. You know, in many of the biggest kind of advances in architecture, going all the way back to the 1840s, the first balloon frame, that kind of wooden balloon frame building, is a quick and easy and cheap way to build on the prairie. And that becomes how a lot of buildings are built in America. After the fire, that cast iron steel frame is created in Chicago. So attention's paid to it because it's one of the things that comes out of the city.
Now, you come from Chicago.
I do.
But
I
you
do.
Live in New York.
I do. I went to college in New York. So it was, you know, I have two passports, I think.
Uh-huh. But we've seen so many people. If Chicago is so great, why did Saul Bellow come here? Why did so many other Chicagoans wind up relocating here or in Los Angeles?
I think that we don't. I mean, it's a city where, surprisingly, when people leave other cities, they sort of kind of left it behind them. And when we see each other, we consider ourselves still Chicagoans. I don't think of us as being expatriates. I think we're exports.
Well, you talk a lot about Chicagoans wanting to be regular.
Right.
How would you define regular?
Regular, I think, when it first, you know, Chicago's an incredibly flat place, which is hard to wrap your head around in a way. It's almost, you know, it's prairie, prairie, prairie. And between all of the various ethnic communities, there was a lot of friction, and regular became a kind of, you know, early libertarianism. I've got my stuff, you got your stuff, we're going to keep it out of each other's hair. And it was a kind of way to communicate between all these different ethnicities. It also ties into, though, in later kind of negative ways, it becomes what we have in common versus turns into what I have and you don't, you know, and that it kind of curdles in a way. But because Chicago is so important in defining advertising, things like that, is the first big mass marketer. Ward's and Sears are come out of Chicago.
Many big ad agencies.
Exactly. Leo Burnett. Its role as that original meeting place of the United States, the kind of Las Vegas, helped feed back that idea of what really is regular. You know, we think of that being a Levittown creation, and I would say that that's a Chicago creation.
Well, regular also suggests conformity.
Absolutely. Right. You know, and what you need sometimes when you have battling, you know, street battles on streets between races or between ethnicities is a sense of what do we have in common.
My guest is Thomas Dyja, D-Y-J-A. His book, The Third Coast, it could have been called The Second City, but I guess...
Taken, been there, done that, right?
When Chicago Built the American Dream is its subtitle. Well, you talked about tensions. There's the north and south sides of
right.
Chicago. When did that divide occur?
Well, it was really always there to some degree, but the power shifted at various points. You know, earlier in the city's life, a lot of the wealthiest Chicagoans lived on the south side, actually. So if you go there now and see something like the Glessner House or Prairie Avenue, that was where the rich lived in Chicago. And then they ended up Potter Palmer, who created made Marshall Fields famous and Palmer House, things like that. He moved to the north side and built this great castle to his wife. And the kind of power and money moved north. Most of the power and money really lived out in the suburbs, the North Shore. And the South Side took on that kind of working class sense.
And then became a black ghetto, in effect.
Parts of it, yeah. Yeah. You know, directly south of the Loop.
Chicago brags about the contributions of black artists, what they've done for the American culture. But it hasn't made much of an attempt to integrate the city, despite all of that.
That's a long, you know, you could give me a whole hour
about that. Despite black mayors.
You know, right, exactly. I mean, the sense of it being taken into the culture, I mean, God knows people in Chicago know Gwendolyn Brooks. On Friday, they had a lovely kind of like Bloom's Day. They called it Brooks Day, and we're reading, you know, Gwendolyn Brooks' poem. She was very much taken to heart because I think she spoke, even though she was very active politically and racially, she had a lot of the kind of concerns of Chicago at large, domesticity, intimacy that were really true. And
she wrote about Bronzeville.
She wrote about Bronzeville, but in ways that were about everyday life. You know, her great poems, In the Mecca, A Street in Bronzeville, are speak not so much to change all the time or revolution, certainly earlier in her career, but they speak to life, you know, and I think white audiences found that also very attractive and understandable.
Chicago was also one of the great centers for gospel music.
Right.
It competed with Philadelphia for dominance for many years.
Detroit.
Later L.A. and Detroit,
Detroit
later again. But Mahalia Jackson came to personify the division between classes, among other things.
Right. I mean, Mahalia comes up from New Orleans in the late 20s and brings this kind of holiness, swinging, ecstatic gospel style, which really comes into conflict with the old settlers, the old line blacks who live in Chicago, who are aghast, you know, at what she's bringing. But what she's bringing really represents that whole movement north of Southern African Americans to Chicago.
And why did so many come to Chicago? It became the center of down-home blues.
John Johnson calls it, you know, said it was the Mecca of blacks moving north. I don't, you know, part of it was simply not convenience, but the fact that there was a train that you know, went straight up to Chicago. The other thing is that there were jobs. Certainly, the second wave during the war, Chicago provided a very high level of living for African Americans.
Although you would have thought Detroit would have become the blue center of America because so many blacks went to Detroit to work in the car industry.
You know, but Chicago had a much more diversified economy, you know, than Detroit did. It's one of the reasons why it had, you know, survived the kind of demanufacturing and deindustrialization period.
Well, it's famous for its theater.
Second City.
It has some of the greatest public art, and it has one of the world's greatest museums.
It does, the Art Institute, which is just so, I think, fundamental to Chicago. One of the great moments that was sort of forks in the road is that they almost got all of Duchamp in 49, but sadly the owners sent it off to Philadelphia. But that would have been amazing. Duchamp and Mies van der Rohe in Chicago would have been, I think, very visibly the heart of American modernism.
And a lot of important writers lived there, for at least for a time. Nelson Algren, pretty much all of his career.
Yes, until Turkle. Nelson leaves for, Algren goes off to Paterson, New Jersey, of all places, and then ends up, he spends the last years of his life in Sag Harbor. And Studs Terkel, of course, his dear friend, who I think, out of all the people, I try to take a very rounded view of all the many, you know, Ray Kroc, Hugh Hefner, all these people. Studs Terkel is the one guy, I got to say, I couldn't find a bad word to say about.
Now, you mentioned Ray Kroc. McDonald's starts in California, but Ray Kroc buys it, and he's from
Chicago. Ray Kroc is a kind of born in the bone, you know, Chicagoan. He's in World War I with Walt Disney, so he's always sort of comparing himself to that. He's looking to make a big hit. He's selling multi-mixers, and he finds these brothers in California, the McDonald's brothers, who have a hamburger restaurant there, and Ray franchises them. So he doesn't own it, but he's the one who really spreads the word on the whole idea.
And then Hugh Hefner builds his Playboy empire and then moves to L.A. But that's another story. How did Chicago's golden era come to an end? Was Mayor Richard J. Daley, the father, was he really an important factor in Chicago's decline?
Sure. I mean, I think that the decline is not all on Chicago's shoulders. You know, there were the big demographic changes. The movement of the country west in certain ways drew a lot of the manufacturing base out. So you lose, you know, Chicago hits in 1950, 3.5 million people. By now, it's about 2.7. That's a lot of people to lose. But the real, I think, what makes it tough for Chicago is the instability of the 50s really creates a desire for Chicagoans for stability, and Daley creates that. And that, I think, slows down a lot of the excitement of the city.
In a review in the New York Times, on the front page of the Sunday New York Times, that outraged many Chicagoans. Rachel Steer asked why a friend had called her hometown poor Chicago. And then she writes, was it the Cubs never winning, the abominable weather, meter parking costing more than anywhere else in America, up to $6.50 an hour, with the money flowing to a private company thanks to the ex-mayor Richard M. Daley's short-sighted 2008 deal? Or was it the fact that in 2012, of the largest American city, Chicago had the second highest murder rate and the second highest combined sales tax, as well as the ninth highest metro foreclosure rate in the country? That it's the third most racially segregated city and located
after
in the
New
state
York.
With the most underfunded public employee pension debt. She didn't even mention Rahm Emanuel's recent battles with the teachers union.
Yes, it was.
A lot to throw on your shoulders for 1 minute.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate when someone doesn't like the place they live in. You know, I think
and
that
she lives there.
She does live there. You know, I mean, look, the front page news in the New York Times today was about crime dropping in Chicago. Chicago's been burnt to the ground. It was, you know, nearly buried under the Depression, went bankrupt. It's come back from other times and other worse things. And I think it's on its way back now. When I go back now, I feel a different city.
And you grew up in the Northwest?
Northwest side.
What is that neighborhood like?
Now it is, you know, becoming a more, I think the great immigrant wave in Chicago now is Mexican. I think they're very open to their Latin population, which is now the second largest minority population, and the African Americans are a third in Chicago. So it has changed, but a lot of the pieces are still there. I'm half a mile away from where Hugh Hefner grew up. So it was kind of fun. We had a lot of the same base in that way.
Is Chicago going to make a comeback? Or right now, it seems to me that tourism probably has helped
it
as much as anything,
it,
because it has such great restaurants.
Restaurants, buildings. I mean, it's a great place to go. Please go, you know. But I think they have a kind of growing emergent tech world. It was the original Silicon Valley. You know, electronics in America came out of Chicago.
So the atom was split in Chicago.
It was, you know, Hyde Park, University of Chicago. And also, even one of the good things about that review was it got people upset and talking there, you know, and that really was a positive. I had many, many conversations over the last 2 months with people talking about all of these issues, and they're excited and they know what's there and they're ready to keep working at it.
Still, the weather is really bad, isn't it?
Well, you know, unless you're a
it
Bear
isn't called the windy
unless
city
you're a
for nothing.
Bear fan and it's December and you're playing, you know, some team from Florida, then it's pretty good.
da Bears, as Saturday Night Live exactly. used to make fun of Chicagoans for saying.
Well, make fun would be strong.
Thomas Dija is the author of three novels, two works of nonfiction. He has also worked as an editor, and he has written another book of nonfiction, this one called The Third Coast. It is published by the Penguin Press. It's subtitled, When Chicago Built the American Dream. Is that all lost now?
No. I don't think so.
Is it going to build more American dreams sometime in the near future?
You know, it's. I think that it's very, very hopeful that it will. You know, I think there's still it's still the middle of the country in some very profound ways. And I think we need as a country to bring Chicago back to the story.